You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to Psyched by MG. This is Mary Grace Randazzo-Ratliff, or MG for short. I've been a psychotherapist in private practice for 32 years now. Guess what, everyone? We all have issues. So it's time to lighten up and move forward. Let's stop letting our crap control us and take control of our crap.
Hey, that's a catchy tune.
What's going on, everyone?
Not, oh my gosh, so Hi, much, everyone. So much. And, well, first, before we get into this very, very important topic today about, you know, the stress that parents and teachers and people are feeling in regards to getting these kids back to school or not. First, what I want to do is we had a couple of really wonderful reviews. And so I want to give a shout out to Monica Cole, who gave all of us such wonderful feedback last week. She listened to our podcast. So big hugs to Monica, and thank you so much for listening. Also, I wanted to give a shout out to a podcast called Your New Best Friend with Tabby and Mike. They gave us a wonderful review, too. So I want to give them a little plug. And I'm going to ask all the listeners right now, again, I do this in the beginning of each podcast, to please go to our pages, either Facebook at Psyched by MG and hit like, or Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Detroit Podcast Network, of course, YouTube. We're on LinkedIn, Instagram, to please go right now and give us a click and subscribe or tell us what you think or write a comment. You know, we're always, you know, looking for recommendations too. In fact, this show was because a listener really wanted to hear about this. So, and I think, boy, they nailed it too. So thank you again to Monica, and hi, everybody. And we've got one of our producers, Jamie Flanagan, with us today. I want him on the mic because he's a teacher. And we can get, you know, what some of the inside perspective on, you know, the stress that they're going through. And we've, of course, hi, Matt Fox.
Hello.
Another producer here tonight with us. Oh, you guys, I have been reading articles for the last several days on this issue of, do we send our kids back or don't we send them back? I was reading just a few minutes ago about the mayor of Chicago, you know, saying, no, this is not a good idea. We cannot, you know, guarantee that these kids will be safe. It's just such a big issue. I mean, parents are really getting stressed out. Barbara and I, you know, we were talking last night and you were quoting some amazing statistics. Barbara, I think we should, you know, let you share those statistics that you were reading about, especially with your background. And right. I think it's really important because I think our parents need to know good data and good facts and information, because they have to make the decision. They have to be an advocate for their children and be proactive in taking care of their kids and protecting their kids. Yeah, can you shoot out some of that data that you were giving me last night?
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, I think I just want to preface this by saying that one of the things that I think is really important is to really stay grounded with the science and stay grounded with what the reality is. There is a tendency, I think, for kind of mass hysteria. Yeah. And to be frank with you, I understand where that is coming from, given the current climate, given also the fact that the trust levels for our leadership are so low. You know. Because we've been lied to, quite frankly, so often that parents are kind of left out there floundering in terms of what to believe. And so one of the things I would encourage parents to do is, please, whatever you do, do not take your scientific data and knowledge and the interpretation of the science data and knowledge from mainstream media. Please do not do that, because all media houses, whichever side they're on, are spinning the numbers to suit their narrative. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it isn't in the best interest of the citizens. I just want you guys to keep that in mind. The best thing you can do for yourselves at this point is please go and look at the CDC, cdc.gov,
yes,
and look through those. They have made the data digestible for absolutely anyone. They have fact sheets for parents in terms of how to look at those numbers, what they actually mean. And then that way you filter out all the noise. I think it's really important, because what I do, and you know, as an epidemiologist, you see an article in the paper and you're like, whoa, this is scary. But then I go to the CDC and say, but what are the scientists who are actually working on this problem saying? Because when you leave things open to interpretation, sometimes by non-scientists, numbers are numbers, but you can spin numbers in such a way and interpret them in such a way that, you know, you can literally just tell stories, whatever stories you feel like telling. So on that note, what I'd like to do is maybe contextualize this whole pandemic first in a global sphere. I'd like to share some numbers, right? Yeah. And then we'll take a look at what the data are saying about children in specific. So, for example, in the entire world so far, 7 of every 100,000 people have died of corona. 7 per 100,000. People with malaria is 5 per 100,000. People with the flu, influenza, is 9 per 100,000. Road accidents is at 18 per 100,000. And heart attacks, deaths due to heart attacks, is at 240 over 100,000. Now, the reason I want to share this is so that we can put it in context and breathe the moment, right? Let's just breathe and understand that the world is not coming to an end because of COVID. However, that having been said, let's deal with this, because I always say, and this is what sometimes I disagree with a lot of my colleagues and physicians, is I say these numbers represent people. So while we're looking at the numbers and on a global scale, when you think about COVID and the deaths from COVID in the context of other things that kill in this world, you might say, well, you know what? It's not that big a deal. But here's the thing. Here in the United States, we've seen some horrific footage. The images of refrigerated trucks, the images of mass graves are engraved in people's minds and psyche.
Let's explain that a little bit. You know, the refrigerator trucks sit outside of the hospitals who are hit extremely hard with COVID.
Yeah, we saw this in New York, and now we're seeing it again in Florida. So at the peak in New York, there were so many deaths that hospitals and morgues could not cope. Matter of fact, hospitals couldn't cope to the extent that they had makeshift hospitals constructed next to hospitals. And they were literally putting the COVID people who needed ventilators.
Yes.
Sorry about that, guys. Sorry about that. They were putting the COVID patients who needed ventilators into the hospital and taking the not so critically ill who had other conditions out, because they couldn't move the ventilators out of the main hospital. And so when people started to die, the morgues could not cope. And so bodies were being piled in refrigerated trucks. I have video footage of it. My cousin was working at a hospital in New York, in a community, actually just sort of outside Chinatown. I've forgotten what the hospital is called. It's got a very interesting name, a Jewish name. And she would take videos and say, Barbara, look what they're constructing over here. Barbara, look at those refrigerators. So I have footage of my cousin who's a nurse, mm-hmm. Sending me this footage, like as it happened in real time. Those are ingrained in people's minds. And so even as I give these numbers, I know for a fact that, yeah, they give some perspective, but it doesn't necessarily allay the fears of the citizens, and it doesn't allay the fears of the community at large. So that's that having been said. Now, the other thing that's coming out is that children get infected, yes, but the signs and symptoms they suffer are generally less severe than in adults. So initially, everybody thought, oh, my God, it's going to be the elders and it's going to be children. Unless they have a pre-existing condition like asthma or something else or are immunocompromised, a lot of these kids are getting infected with COVID-19.
Did we freeze, guys?
Nope, we're here.
Oh, I think Barbara froze.
Yeah, Barbara. Okay. Barbara has an issue.
You know, we'll get her back, but I want to jump on to what she was saying, because I personally went through my son getting very sick with COVID. And I never saw my son struggled with fevers for 6 days that were 103.7, 104,
wow.
Shakes and chills, mm-hmm. that were so severe that we had to change him, you know, 5-6 times a night.
Wow.
You know, diarrhea, throwing up, no sense of taste or smell. It scared the crap out of us because we'd never seen our kids so sick. And it's not only you see your kids so sick like that, but you have to watch him and monitor him all night, because we kept looking for a breathing problem.
Mm.
And then you don't want to go to the hospital unless you have to go to the hospital. So for me, when I think about, you know, these kids going back to school or not, and I also think about the teachers, after watching my son, you know, I personally, I'm going to make sure I make sure my kids are safe, and I'm very concerned about this issue and these questions. I don't think, Jamie, enough is being said about it's putting the kids at risk, but it's putting the teachers at risk. It's putting the staff at the freaking schools at risk.
I have three of my dear, dear female teacher friends are breast cancer survivors.
Mm.
And they're back in school and they're teaching. But I mean, they've gone through a lot, you know, physically, medically, having chunks of their bodies removed,
yes.
To fight this cancer. And, you know, thank God they've won, but, you know, they're not in the best medical condition to come down with something like this. And then the teaching staff themselves, there's an array of ages,
mm-hmm.
People of all ages, in our teaching staff. You know, you have some young people, but there's some older folks. I am proudly, sadly, I'm the oldest person in the English department. I haven't been there the longest. There's one person that's been there longer,
yeah.
But, I got 6 months on her. So, but there's several teachers much older than me. So that's the thing. So here's what's – let me tell you, because I can tell you what's going on, and I can tell you what's going to happen. Nobody knows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you have the superintendents and principals scrambling. They have no idea. They're coming up with plans, and we have no idea what the state is going to mandate. And if there will be any federal mandates as to what we can do. So depending on where people are listening, it depends on how your state is handling it, how involved your state government is in your local school district. But in Michigan, we're just kind of hanging on by the skin of our teeth, just kind of saying, okay, well, what's the governor going to tell us we can or cannot do? And then with that – so we have – I teach at Fraser High School over on the east side here in Detroit, and we have four plans underway. We were really, really lucky because our district had had about 8 years ago, the community passed a bond for technology, and we have every kid in the district has a device, either an iPad or a laptop. Every kid K through 12 has a device. So, and every teacher from welding to gym to med health, you know, math, science, English, world language, had a digital classroom already set up. So when we had to, it was March 13th and it was like, all right, we're not coming back on Monday. We're like, all right, everybody check Blackboard on Monday, and we'll figure it out from there. So it was just a hiccup for us. Some schools didn't have that infrastructure. So they're scrambling to figure it out. So, but he, so here's the thing. As school districts, as a school district has to prepare to be totally online come September. Our wish, our hope, our want is to have some sort of manageable hybrid, you know, being able, because I mean, the buildings are only so big, right? I mean, I had 200 kids on my class load. I saw 200 kids every semester, and it was a different 200 kids. So they would switch. Our teachers in my building see anywhere from like 170 to 230 kids in our class load for the semester between all the classes we teach. There's somewhere between, you know, 25 to 35 kids in a class. I had a class of 50. Like three semesters ago. It was my intro to journalism class. And they were like, all right, there's only, you know, you're supposed to 30, you get paid extra for anybody over 30. They're like, there's 50 kids that want it. We don't have enough to run a second section. So we got to tell 20 kids they can't have it. And I'm like, well, there is that large group instruction room. I go, I could do it. And I did. Some of my best editors, I had three kids in that class that came out, were some of my best editors. So it was a success. But so, I mean, the classrooms are full is what I'm saying. And it's a challenge. So schools need to be prepared to be virtual and need to be prepared to be 100% virtual. Our hope, our wish is that it'll be some sort of reasonable accommodation of that somewhere. But schools need to be ready to be virtual because, you know, we'd love to have a regular schedule. We really would. And a kid's learn better is better for families, you know, working families. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has the childcare. So, you know, if the kids are staying home and the parents are working, so the high school kids are taking care of the middle school and the younger kids, it's like, oh, you got to go to math class. It's like, I got to watch the baby. You know, it's like it's they become the caregivers. So it's really a challenge. So if we bring them back into the school building, what happens if we bring people back into the school building? One teacher gets COVID. Right? Yeah. What happens to every kid he had in class all week and all the kids that had classes with those kids all week? One person in a school building gets COVID, the building is shut down. It is shut down and you're going virtual.
Well, you know, today Amazon announced, Google announced, is it Citibank announced? They're not bringing their workers back until January.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
You have these businesses. Ford is not bringing theirs back until January. So I'm sitting here with this logic that is so simple. You have these major corporations for adults saying, no, we're not doing it. We're not doing it.
But at the same time, you have the Michigan High School Athletic Association who said sports are on as of today for the fall.
Our kids are practicing. My football team is out there and they're practicing in pods of 10 and they throw the football and they catch the football and then the football has to be wiped down before anybody else can touch it.
But they're saying the full fall sports schedule is a go.
Yeah.
That's what
that's sweet.
The High School Athletic Association
that's,
is.
That's sweet.
Right.
That's sweet. Yeah. That is, there's no, it's Ice Cube in Hades is what that is. That is no way is there going to be sports.
Well, I agree. No. And why would they even bring that up? Because now it just panics parents.
Have you met parents? Oh, that there is. Yeah. Well, and if you cancel it, you got parents losing their mind. Why are you stealing my child's life?
Uh-huh.
Yes. And so here you have these major corporations who are saying no. And in school is a question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You know what it comes down to? It's economics. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
It's all related to money and economy, and that's what decisions ring based on.
Yeah.
And So it's important for parents to understand that. That being an advocate for your child is so key here. Mm-hmm. Because this is not something small, and we do not know fully the extent of this virus. We have not had enough time to really understand the impact of this virus, especially on kids, because it was just in May. Barbara, correct me if I have the date wrong. I think it was just in May when they determined that younger children get it and have symptoms, but it's things like swollen extremities, the hands and the feet, swollen tongue.
Sorry to interrupt you. And also, I just pulled up when I got kicked off. I pulled up the latest CDC update because they're updating daily. Yes. Listen to this. Contrary to popular belief before, so I'm just going to give you a few stats of some states just so we, again, contextualize. Arizona, 11% of total cases are in those people who are under 20. In California, it's 8.4. In Mississippi, 9.4. In Washington State, 11. In Tennessee, 4.5 of those are cases of those who are 10 and under. And 11% are those who are 11 through 20 years old. Now, contrary to popular belief, which was, oh my gosh, the infection in young people and kids is around 2%. We're seeing this jump. And, you know, it's on CDC, just came through. They collated these numbers.
So and just again, think about that for Barbara, that one... 11 children in 100. 11. Okay, listeners, 11 children in 100.
School going age.
Yeah.
We're not talking babies. We're not talking babies or toddlers. Yes. We're talking that age that goes out of the house into school. Then here's the thing you're talking about. There is something that is happening now that is being seen in adults. That is going to be seen and is being seen in some kids already, which is this. The antibody response that to COVID infection wanes. There are three papers now. One is out of India. One is out of the UK. These are scientific papers I pulled up yesterday. The antibody response is not protective. It wanes after 3 months. It's gone. In some patients, it's 3 weeks after they clear the infection, the antibodies go away. In other words, and why are they looking at this? Because they're people who've been infected by COVID 3-4 months ago at the very beginning of this pandemic, who are being infected again and suffering worse or the same kind of severe symptoms that they suffered with the first infection. So what is this telling us? It is telling us that one, the idea of a vaccine seems really far-fetched right now, although we already have some that have gone through phase one and phase two clinical trials. But two, that any elders in any home, any adults in any home who've had COVID are likely, or any teachers who've had COVID and survived it, are likely to get infected a second time and suffer the same signs and symptoms in that severity. Now, here's the other problem with that is that they are seeing patients who are now showing up at their doctors with problems and issues that have been caused by COVID infection. For example, people's lungs are no longer functioning as they should. People are having heart problems as a result of having been infected, cleared the infection, but this is the secondary sequelae, if you like, of COVID infection. So all this to say, as a mother, I have four teenage daughters. My daughters will be staying home because one is one thing to be infected and clear the infection. But as we stand now, we are still discovering new things about this virus in terms of what are the long-term consequences of COVID infection, even in children who get infected, have a bit of fever and clear it. Some of these kids are turning up with these secondary symptoms, if you like, that are the result of having been infected by COVID. Mm-hmm. So again, I want parents to take this information and use it as they make decisions. My hope, as I was listening to you guys, is that we won't even get to that, is that those in charge, like the governors of states, I'm not going to talk about federal because at this point there's no use. Okay. I'm hoping that the local governments, the state governments, will make the call and say, you know what? We'd already set up online platforms. Let the kids stay home and do online schooling. There's some smaller schools who've decided, I can think of Green Hills School here. They've decided to do a kind of rotation where kids of certain grades go in one day while other grades don't, because social distancing is important. And you cannot have all these kids in the same building at one time. It's just not going to work. There will be no social distancing. So they would have certain grades in one day while others sit at home. So they would alternate the number of days they go into the classroom and the number of days stay at home. I still see complications with that as far as I see, which is why I think ultimately the call is going to be that school is canceled until further notice, mm-hmm. and that we're not looking to going back in August or September.
And that's really it, that the schools, you know, they need, we want the kids there. And we want to teach these kids face to face. But the reality is the schools need to be prepared for the online opportunities to get it done. There's a lot of, you know, if you're watching TV, you'll see those, you know, the virtual K-12 schools and enroll your kids. Mm-hmm. And like I said, Fraser, we were really ahead of the curve and we had this set up. So we're offering that and we're opening it up to students in Macomb and the Tri-County areas to join the Fraser School District. So we may actually be hiring teachers. It's kind of the position we're in, but we were really ahead of the game. We're really, really lucky. And our community reached in their pockets and they paid for it. But what this is going to expose is a digital divide across social economic lines. Mm-hmm. And it's really going to expose this. And then rural areas, you have your, you know, way out in the country, that, you know, they're still on dial-up. You know, they're getting the AT&T satellite feed. Yeah. And that's going to be a challenge for some. So there's a lot of challenges ahead. So schools need to be prepared to be online, and parents need to, they're like, ah, well, they're going to open the schools. Okay. They are, but how long? So you, a parent, if parents plan for schools to be closed 100%,
right?
Have a plan in place for schools to be closed 100%. And then if you don't need that, good. Kids are in school. Life is good. Mm-hmm. If you're like, oh, Billy's going to school, and then the second day they're like, ah, it's just not going to work. Yeah. And you're like, crap, what am I going to do with Billy? So parents need to have that plan now instead of scrambling 2 weeks in.
Yes. Yeah. You know, Jamie, you hit such a key thing that I wanted to hit on with parents today is look at, you have several weeks. You need to get prepared. And that means that you have those sitters that you have evaluated, that you know what kind of home they're coming from, that you can take the temperature, that they wear the mask, that they get you the break, they get those kids outside, that, you know, there's certain things that you can be doing as parents to advocate for yourselves to get relief, to not try to handle this all alone, and to get the kids doing different activities, and you're not the only one that's doing them all. You know, sometimes parents get into that cycle, and Dave, you know this, where they become these lone soldiers, you know, they take care of everything. Mm-hmm. Well, this pandemic is a situation where you have to build your network. You have to build your resources to give you the breaks and to help you to take care of your kids. If they, I think they will be inside. I'm someone that's like, we shouldn't even be saying if. We don't have enough information about this damn virus to be safe, period. And because of that, parents, advocate, plan it now, figure it out, build your resources. And I'm sure, you know, Jamie, I don't know if you know of certain educational websites that can help, you know, parents or moms and dads to know what their resources are that they might be able to tap into on their own.
It's Google it. I'm sure there's community groups. I mean, look, turn to your community, because and that's the thing. It's like, what do we do with our children? It's like, no, it's what do we do with Billy and what do we do with Susie?
Yes.
And because that's the challenge I face with, 200 kids in my classroom. I have 200 different types of learners and I have to work with that. So I would find things in the community, find the resources from your local school district. Facebook groups are great. I'm sure your community and you probably have some super involved parents, and that's a good place to turn. Offhand, I don't know anything. If you're trying to teach lessons, there is the Khan Academy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can learn anything. And actually they're getting better at it, because I was kind of, they're like, if you're not using Khan Academy in your classroom, you're disservicing your kids. And I'm like, all right, I'll go. I'll look. I'm an English teacher, right? And so I'm looking and I'm like, it's all math and science, right? Yeah. But actually, when it first came out, but now there's more and more things on the Khan Academy. So if you're trying to help, or if you're trying to figure out things to help teach your kids, Khan Academy is like really good videos. They're actually good. They're short. The people speak to the kids well. So those are good. So the Khan Academy is good. Turn to the Facebook groups and the social media groups and the resources from your local district. Another thing to do is teach your kids wearing a mask. If you do or don't, wherever you stand on masks, I'm telling you right now, if you want your kid in a school building, they're going to have to wear a mask in that school building.
Good point, Jamie.
You may want to wean them into, even if you're like, that's my rights. It's like, well, then keep your kid at home, because if they want to come into this building, they're going to be wearing a mask. So with your, especially your younger kids, kind of take a little bit of that stigma out of it. Maybe get them one with a fun little giraffe face on it or something.
We talked about art projects where you can decorate your mask. Yeah.
And I think that's really important too. People underestimate. I have a friend who has a 3-year-old. And she documents his reactions and responses to the mask over time since this pandemic started. On one of these, I literally cried because it was so sad. It's hard enough. We've got adults out there acting like kids, refusing to wear masks. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine what it must be like for 3-, 4-, 5-year-olds? Yes, they can be taught it. But let me tell you, it is torture for them. On this one day, he tore this thing off his face. Yeah. He sat on the floor and he cried. I don't want to wear this. I don't want to wear this. And I could get it, because when I wear the mask to go grocery shopping, by the time I come home, I'm done. And so we can imagine that if these kids are going to be at school a full day, one, how are you going to make sure? And they're all coming from different homes. It's not like they're all going to be disciplined enough and taught how to wear this mask so that when they get to school, they keep it on. They may be coming from homes where the parents are like, you know what? We don't believe in the mask things. So they'll put the mask on the kid, but the kid's never seen the parents do it. They're not in that habit of putting, because it becomes habitual after a while. But if they haven't developed that, these are the kids who will go to school and rip the mask off. Or, you know what I mean? And when teachers are in a classroom, what are they supposed to be doing teaching? Are they going to be spending their time trying to manage the mask situation on top of the keep your hands to yourself, on top of the stay 1 meter or is it 6 feet apart, on top of the wash your hands, stop wiping your boogers on this one's back? I mean.
Yeah. I mean, these are. You know, I want to challenge, a couple of tech industries. I'd like to Amazon made, I don't even know the number of the profits that Amazon had during this pandemic, multi-billions of dollars. But, I want to challenge these tech industries to step up here. And, Jamie was talking about, these kids out in these urban areas or these rural areas that, don't have internet and don't have, the computer or the tablet or the Chromebook. We need to be spending these next several weeks, instead of saying, are we going back? Aren't we going back? It should be, no, we're not. We don't have enough information about this darn virus. We need much more time to really get it right. And how can we help these families to be sufficient in the home with technology?
Absolutely.
And so Amazon needs to step in here, and all these big industries need to step in. And then the other thing I think about is meetups. We need meetups for kids that they can get on and meet with other teenagers and really, you know, either whether it's a support group, the, you know, Dave and I call it, or a bitch session where they get to complain about the, all this crap that they're dealing with, which it is a bunch of crap. But the, you know, the meetup groups are really key. And so I'm going to encourage parents to step in here, and you're going to need to advocate on several levels. And to really talk to your kids about what their needs may be. If this happens, let's do a needs assessment. What would help you with this transition? It's going to be a pain in the ass. It's going to be hard. But what can we come up with to help you through that transition? And key things are connecting them with friends and good supports. The getting support to the parents with people who come and take the children for a while. And help with activities, especially the young ones. The third thing is different activities that parents can have at their fingertips, different ideas that they don't have to dig for, that they can give these children. Those are three very, very important things for parents to hear. And the other thing is, again, advocate. They have to take care of their kids. I don't give a flying shit if the statistic was 1 in 100, and whether it's an adult or a child. Come on. Now, we had a death in our family from COVID, and I lost an aunt of mine. It's a bunch of crap. And, you know, you're seeing all these people who are now getting it or are humbled because it hit their families. It doesn't matter. They're not ready to go back. And I'm on my box here. But the other thing I want to say is when I'm encountering these parents who are like, oh, I hope they can go back. Oh, I hope they can go back. I get their stress. I get their fatigue. I get that they just want this to be done. Whether you have a kid or not, I had someone on Facebook who was on this spiel of, you know, it ain't real. And these people are coming from a place where they go into denial. It's very difficult for them to deal with problems that are serious in their lives. And they go into this denial. And when they're in that denial, they go into rationalizations. Dave, you know this one. They do that rationalizing thing. And when
it's very unfortunate that this condition and this disease is such that people are not allowed to go and actually see. I have witnessed it, and all it takes is you seeing one patient to know how absolutely awful getting COVID is.
Yes.
And so when I hear people who say it's not real, I'm like, well, do you send them a video? But even that's not enough. What would probably jolt some people, and this is so sad, is that people have to wait until their loved ones get sick in order to believe that it's there. You know, but the truth is, if people could really just take a glimpse into what's going on in the ER right now, what's going on in hospitals, it's sobering. It really is.
And people who tend to go into the denial place, they won't look. They won't allow into their process, into their person, the evidence, the statistics that they need to be responsible for the problem.
Wow.
And this is a dynamic that Dave and I deal with every day in our office, where someone comes in and there's this problem sitting in front of them and they won't deal with it and they won't look at it. And you can prevent, you know, you provide them with the facts and the evidence and they just go into denial. And what I do with that person is I'm pretty rough. I want to hit them right between the eyes and say, shut the fuck up and listen. You came to me because you wanted to know my opinion. You wanted an expert's opinion. If you don't like what's told to you, you got to grow up. You got to grow up and be responsible, especially with this pandemic, because people will get hurt.
Well, and let's bring that back too, because what we were just speaking about just a moment ago, it's already July 16th. Parents need to make plans right now. This is not something that's off in the distance. This is right going to come up. And you know, anybody who's done therapy, and I experienced myself, I'm a procrastinator. You can't wait and just expect this to fix itself overnight.
No.
You have to put plans into effect right now while you have a few weeks. And again, things can change drastically over a day. We don't even know.
Yeah.
But you need to have a plan in place and start right now. So for those of you who are in denial or are procrastinators, don't wait, because it's gonna be on you before you realize it.
Take this seriously. You got to take it seriously. Stop the denial. Stop the denial and pretending that this isn't really there or it's not so bad, all because you don't want to be stressed out.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Because of people like that, we still have a problem.
Yeah.
We still have a problem.
You have that plan in place and then not need it for daycare, childcare, if schools are virtual, good. But if you don't have it and you need it, it's just going to be so much added stress on the family.
It's like life insurance, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's the whole thing. And people are stressed. People are worried. And if you can, and this is all proactive. It's even being mindful of your circumstances. Change what you can now that is going to put you in a better circumstance 30 days from now.
And you know, I was talking with my principal. I spent the last 2 days at the high school. My yearbooks finally came in. I'm the yearbook advisor. I do the newspaper, yearbook, broadcast, some English and speech.
You do broadcast?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Good for me. So I do. The yearbooks came in. The new phone book's here. The new phone book's here. I'm somebody. But we were passing them out. And there were a lot of kids. Like, the parents are driving up without a mask on, but the kids have their masks on. And I had my mask on. I was playing cowboy, so I like playing cowboy. But I did on a couple of kids. I didn't, and they had their mask on, and they were like, you know, leaning back in the car. And then one of my broadcast kids, I'm like, hey, Brendan, I you know, PBS wants us to do this thing, you know. And his mom's like, he's like, well, and his mom's like, he won't leave the house. She goes, I had to force him to come get his book. These kids are scared. Uh-huh. If you're telling yourself, oh, we might be in school, there's no way. My principal shrugged his shoulders and he's like, it's we're gonna be virtual. It's like. Yeah. He goes, we're planning for everything. He goes, we're going to be virtual.
Yeah. You are a cowboy.
And I'm a cowboy. I love my little cowboy.
I want to say to superintendents and these people who are really struggling with this issue, just step back. Don't keep this too complicated.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough time with this disease, with COVID-19, to know effectively what will keep people safe.
And I that's why I wanted to post.
Rather, they spend the time planning how to best take care of this from a virtual perspective. Mm.
And that's why I wanted
how
to ask the group.
Let's spend these next several weeks figuring out how do we support these families, these people, these teachers who are going through this.
Right.
Instead of this nonsense of are we or aren't we? Are we? You know what? The decision's made.
Mm.
No.
Right, and I had a question for the group.
Google made the decision. Amazon made the decision.
I ain't listening to you no more.
Yeah, right? You know, I had a question for the group. How do you, and for Jamie, you know, how do you keep everybody positive, especially the students, to keep them in a learning mode, whether it be virtually? You know, if you're going to be virtual, how do you keep them? How do you motivate them to stay positive?
You know, can I jump in on that one?
Yeah. Go ahead.
You gotta let them bitch first.
Yeah.
You can't just pretend it ain't there.
Oh yeah.
You gotta give them the space to let the kids bitch. Put it in a framework though. You know, you can't bitch all class, but you get your 10 minutes in the beginning, let people bitch about it and share. And then their minds will open up better.
Hmm. Okay.
Instead of denying it.
So it's like if any parents are listening and they have a young men, put a damn shirt on before you come on the Zoom with your teacher. I can't tell you how many teenage boys
are
sitting there with their shirt on. You know, it's like, put a shirt on for crying out loud. There's just so many things of etiquette and just, it's crazy. It's crazy.
That escalated quickly.
Yeah, you have to wear a shirt. Don't have the dog or the cat in the room.
Oh, that's fun. Stop that's it. Fun. That's fun.
And I think, to be honest with you, this is where we adults also come in. I saw it with my four here. So my oldest was really struggling. She's a freshman in college. And so her freshman year was cut short. She wasn't happy about that. But she has the tools and the mechanisms to kind of rationalize and see that, you know what, this is what it is and just get on with it. Then I have my 14-year-old twins. One was perfectly fine because she's an introvert. She likes being at home. My middle one, who's 17, was absolutely fine because she too is an introvert and she thrived. She literally thrived during this time. Then we have my other 14-year-old who was going stir crazy. And what I found was necessary for her is I, as her mom, had to be the adult and keep things positive and keep perspective, because she had the tendency to throw the baby out of the box. Oh, I know, I'll never play with my friends again. And this is a whole calamity. And then you kind of scale it back and say, at least you're not out there. Look at the number of people who are getting sick and dying. You've got to keep them in the conversation in a manner that doesn't necessarily stress them, but in a manner that shows them the reality for what it is, especially the teenagers. Mm-hmm. Younger kids, I guess, you know, you take a different approach, but definitely teenagers, I think, are old enough to be able to digest the fact that we are in crisis mode right now, and therefore things are not going to be business as usual. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to do that and then to mirror the positivity. So my kids, like you were saying, you know, people showing up on Zoom with hair unbrushed and no shirts. In our house, when school shut down, that was not allowed. You got up and you behaved as if you were going to walk out the door. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I do, because I work at home. So I get up, I get dressed as if I'm going to an office. And I said, you guys are going to school. You're not going to show up on Zoom with your teachers. Your teachers are not going to show up with hair unkempt and, you know, sort of, you know, no, so you're not going to disrespect them. You're not going to disrespect your peers, and you're not going to disrespect yourself by showing up like that. Yeah. So we kept it routine-like. And then when they had breaks, they got off their computers and they got to work in the backyard or do whatever it is they do. But kids need that kind of structure.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you remove that structure from them, given the already chaotic setup we find ourselves in right now, it can really unhinge them, I think.
My kids, my daughter did okay. She likes the space. But my son struggled.
Right. And
my son got into some old bad behaviors with sleeping all the time, being isolated, only getting on the computer, the eating issues. I mean, all of this stuff started to come again.
Right.
And I had to sit down with him and we talked it out. And he said, wow, I didn't realize how bad that pandemic was hitting me and the isolation of the pandemic.
Right.
And I recommend for families with each kid, really get to know one of their close friends and have a good heart to heart with their parents and say, listen, can we be open and honest with each other so that they can do visits?
Yeah.
They can do visits. We can figure out a way that we can have them in each other's space, whether it's social distancing on a back porch, whether it's, you know, sitting on the driveway, whatever it is, that they can connect. And we will tell you honestly what we've been exposed to, or if there's a problem, and you keep communicating with us. Don't be afraid to tell each other what's going on, whether you have to travel, where you work, any of that information, but find a buddy system for these kids.
Right. I just, you know, before we came, I just picked up my kids from, we call it exclusive dating. We're exclusive, where they have a couple of their friends who, you know, they go and they, so they don't even go into the house. Today they were playing in a park nearby.
Yeah.
But my other twin, the one who needs the social contact, yeah, because she really, it affects her. And so they were out for a couple of hours, took them at 1 o'clock, picked them up at 4:30, brought them home, and they're happy. So yeah. I think it is important. Find a family. Keep it small. Find a family or a couple of their friends who you talk with the parents so that there is this understanding, like you say, and then the kids can visit each other, and you provide the situational circumstances where they can socially distance, where they do keep their masks on, but they get to spend time together.
You know, the drive-ins are popping up all over the place. This is another thing that I want parents.
Amazing.
Imagine out in Novi just opened this multiplex drive-in. Here in Plymouth, we have the Ice Arena on Beck Road that's got their drive-in running now.
Wow.
If people Google search, you know, and really encourage the kids, like each of their friends can be in their car next to each other and talking. And watch a drive-in movie.
They'll be texting. They'll be texting each other.
But they're near each other.
When they're right next to each other.
But they can see each other. Yeah.
Right.
The movies they can finally text in.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. And they get the clap and the woo. And all right, there you go.
Can I try it really quick?
That's not too far from home.
Yes.
I've been dying to go to the movies and stuff like that. That's amazing. That's great.
If they go online, they'll see all the movies that are going to be running. And the same thing with Imagine in Novi, that that's all open. And let's support these people. I mean, the drive-ins are back, people.
What's better than curbside popcorn?
That's honestly it. Yeah, actually, it's really funny you talked about the movies, because just on our other podcast, The Man Cave Happy Hour, we just had Paul Glantz, the CEO of Imagine Theaters, and his beverage manager on to talk about how cool it is that they had bars when they were open and what they were doing and how they were coping and what their plan was for the opening of the Imagines. And they talked about the drive-ins that they're launching and how the one in Novi is launching. So Imagine-Entertainment is their website. And so Paul and their crew, they're working hard to keep their employees working and the lights on, so there's jobs for people to come back to. They're really struggling. So I love
the
drive-throughs. Imagine-Entertainment.
Imagine-Entertainment. Okay, because people then can look it up and find out the locations that have that drive-in going. I mean, families can do it. The teenagers can do it. The kids can do it. The little ones. It's safe. You're in your car. My husband, of course, the engineer, was saying, you know, gee, in the old days, you used to pull up on a little hill so that when you looked out, you weren't looking at the roof line of your car.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I said, well, then we'll start buying those little blocks that you drive your car up on. And then it will take, and he's like, that's a great idea. So little tip, everybody.
There you are.
Then people will pile out of the trunk. Yeah.
Right. And can we get the metal speakers that hang on the windows that have wires frayed?
I have one of those.
Do you really?
From the Bel Air drive-in.
Here's
an
upside. Our kids get to see how we grew up.
Oh, right. Yes.
When you tell them stuff like this, my kids roll their eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think planning is so important right now. And I do feel, you know, stop this bull crap about aren't we, knock it off, give everybody time to focus, get everybody time to make their plans, do what they have to do to get ready for this fall and being online. And challenging the tech industry. I have a startup in tech myself with psychology and good mental health, you know, experiences through tech. And the tech industry could really be involved here in some really great ways for especially these families that don't have what they need or locations that can even access the internet. I mean, come on. It's 2020, people.
I unfortunately, I think that's always going to be a challenge. It's just that way with even low-income areas anywhere are always going to be disadvantaged, and that's unfortunate. And I hate to say it's taken something like this for us to address something that should have been addressed 100 years ago, but maybe this will force that.
That's why we talk about it.
Right.
Yeah, and the truth of the matter is, a lot of the advocates who've been saying, you know, schools open are people who represent these low-income schools because they're talking about, you know, children who are in homes where, for example, mother and father don't speak English.
Right.
And so the way in which, and there's no technology in the home except maybe TV. And so how are these kids going to access online? The parents who are not, you know, who are not English speakers can't even teach them. So they can't, you know, in a home where, you know, parents speak English and say, well, there's no technology, but we can download some, well, not download, see, there we go again, you see, privileged speaking. You download from where? From what?
Right, right. Right.
So even the challenges are huge for, like you say, Dave, for low-income yep. families. Yep. And I think this is a time where as community, as people, you know what? If you're sitting in your home and you have extra laptops, you have extra iPads.
Yes.
A lot of people do. Even if you have iPhones that you
know. Yeah, old phones, yes.
Upgraded. Could we please, somebody, let's start an initiative where we start yes. collecting this stuff and giving it
donate
away
it
to people who really need this.
Donate it. I have an extra computer.
Because that's the next thing, right? The big tech. And yes, you guys out there in tech, you guys who have.
Yes.
Hello, multi-billionaires. You want to spend some
Amazon
money somewhere. You know what? This is your opportunity to really step up as community without necessarily waiting for government or anyone else to do anything. And let's look in our backyard. We don't even need to look far to know or to see where the needs are. And let's step this up for the next few
yes.
weeks that we can
yes.
get all our children, you know,
yes.
at least some semblance of a decent education, you know, online and being safe.
What are they called? There's these little internet boxes for areas that don't have good internet.
Hotspots?
Is it the hotspot? I mean, I have a hotspot on my phone.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think
what in blazes are you talking about?
Portable ones. Dave, is it a hotspot?
Yeah.
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 Well, you know what? We've got all these, you know, hello AT&T, hello Verizon,
yep.
hello Metro PCS, hello T-Mobile. Can we please have a donation of some hotspots so that kids can access the internet?
There are tons of different companies offering standalone hotspots. I have one called right. Karma, and it's yes. I don't know what it is, 100 gigs a month for I can yeah. access wherever the Wi-Fi is available. I have it with me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yep.
We could get into these households for kids that are struggling.
Yep.
And, you know, my gosh, anybody listening, you know, who wants to be a part of organizing this, you know, we'll be glad to talk to you and be a part of it and
absolutely,
you know, do our part to really reach and get people prepared for what's coming. And, you know, shut off, you know, the people who are saying, is it going to happen or isn't it?
Yeah,
for your kid.
Here's the thing. I know we're getting close to the end here, but I think everybody has to just change their perspective and focus here that this is going to be around a while.
Yes.
This is not going to magically go back to normal in a week or a month or even 6 months, I don't think. So let's plan right now and accept that and start being proactive. Regarding yeah. a lot of these issues.
Yes, yes, exactly.
You got to set the politics aside on this right. one when it comes to the kids in school.
Yep.
And just be prepared for the, well, they have to open the schools and they have to, it's like, okay, well, take your stand. It's unlikely that's going to happen. So you need to be prepared for it. So set the politics aside and make it.
Regardless of how much you bitch, it's not going to change the overall thing of what's happening.
Stop the freaking denial, people.
Stop yelling at your kids. Get on social media. Spew your anger there, and then go help your children.
Yep. Exactly.
It's important. Now, you know, this is such an important issue. We may pick this up again as this proceeds. You know, definitely start. You know, give us your comments and feedback, and let us know. You know, if we miss something or. There's something more we need to address. We will definitely read them. Next week, we will be off. Dave, I didn't get a chance.
We are. I'll just come in and do it.
I'm off to New York, and Barbara is, her stomach is still not right.
Oh, so boy. Okay.
Man.
She's going to be laid up, too. So
we'll
be back the following week.
Can't we put together a best of and run it?
Yeah.
That's what all shows do. When you're gone, you just do a best of show.
Yeah.
Clip show.
And Jamie always keep telling us to kind of do a couple extras so we can get ahead. And I think they're right. And just a real quick, in August, we're going to have a great show for the younger people on the hookup culture.
Who's the younger? Who are you talking about? That does not include me.
Are you talking about the 40-somethings or?
Who are the younger?
You guys know what the hookup culture is.
Oh, That's relative.
Yeah.
Because
on TikTok
would
eat you up.
They were just
like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, but Lisa Bonage is going to come and be a guest on the show.
What in blazes are you talking about?
Because I'm not going to be here next week. But I want to thank everybody. Dave, I'm so sorry in the beginning, give a shout out to your podcast.
Yep, my podcast, Motor City Hypnotist Podcast. Look for it. It should be hitting soon. You can find it on my, if you can't find it on the podcast sites yet, it's in process. Find it on my website, motorcityhypnotist.com.
Yes, yes. And as everybody knows, Barbara's going to be with us each week. Yay.
Yay, Barbara.
She's got to get well now. So,
yes.
And everybody, you guys, you know, you can see us, you know, Facebook, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Detroit Podcast Network, the best one out there.
It's Podcast Detroit, actually, but I won't correct you.
Sorry.
Thanks
for correcting me. I'm so sorry.
She's on a roll.
I'm on a roll.
Get some butter, yeah.
but anyway, thanks for joining us, and definitely keep clicking away and letting us know what you think.
Yep. Everybody be safe. We'll be back soon.